WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
And welcome to WrestleSpective. I'm your host, Jason Mann. Today, my guests, one of my common and most wonderful guests, Kay Sawyer Paul. Welcome back to the program, sir. It's been a while.
Thank you. It has been way too long. I've, of course, been in the gym just clanging and banging.
Absolutely.
Clanging and banging.
Well, you got to get ready for your big match.
That's right.
Twice in a lifetime. Actually, you know what? This podcast is thrice in a lifetime. Because you and I have reviewed, the main events of the previous three WrestleManias heading into the next WrestleMania match. This is sort of our tradition.
Yes, it is. I'm very much enjoying this tradition.
Yeah.
Much like my tradition of being on the every 20 episodes of the wrestling podcast. I like that I have a pre-WrestleMania date with you every year.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, it's a comforting routine for me. So we are going to discuss, as people may have figured out by now, the main event of WrestleMania 28, The Rock versus John Cena. The build for this match, different than any other build in WrestleMania history, because the match was announced the night after WrestleMania 27. For a brief overview of what happened, The Rock, of course, returned just before WrestleMania 27, was announced as the host of that event, insulted Cena, referring to him by his outfit attire as Fruity Pebbles. Cena and he clashed back, leading into WrestleMania 27. At WrestleMania 27 itself, The Rock helped cost Cena the match, allowing The Miz to defend his championship. Then The Rock and Cena decided, hey, you and I need to fight. We need to fight this out and get all this anger out. And it's like, we're going to have a match in 364 days from now.
Well, they were so angry they couldn't do it then.
Well, obviously, yeah, they needed to, you know, they needed to get rid of the, you know, the extra emotions, the passion, and just distill it down to its essence.
Mm-hmm.
And The Rock, not really around too much in the rest of 2012. The notable things that he did were to celebrate his own birthday in early May of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then Survivor Series 2011 had his first match in about 8 years, teaming with Cena against R-Truth and The Miz. And really quite a wonderfully fun match, both for just, you know, the crowd response to The Rock and to Cena, and for Truth and Miz's fun antics.
Absolutely. I quite enjoyed that one.
Yeah. And then Rock was pretty quiet up until about 5 weeks before Mania, in which he comes back and is upset with John Cena for being John Cena, and calls him a Kung Pao bitch, which, you know, is sort of
as
like,
you do,
as you might as well, yeah,
sure.
And Cena bringing up that the fact that Rock had notes on his hands, and then the next week we have The Rock going through Boston and detailing the history in supposedly a comical way. Supposedly, right.
I love how slightly glib you are.
Then, and actually, one of the better moments was Cena actually being serious and coming out sort of addressing his grievances with The Rock of, you know, of the major points of Rock not being there and of dismissing Cena, even though Cena's been there and has been the company man and has even been around WWE when it wasn't cool, and sort of making fun of himself a little bit with just kind of the clothes and saying, I look ridiculous, but, you know, I fight for this and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you're making fun of me because of how I look, and that's kind of crappy, and so on and so forth. And then in an example of the moments of this feud that I did not enjoy, we had the Rock concert. And we had where the Rock, in increasingly off-key performance, performed again. Comedy, you know, of
Sure.
making fun of John Cena. And then we sort of close out with actually a really good dual interview with Rock and Cena of them kind of laying out the of what's happened over the past year. Rock and both of them talking about the importance of this match to their legacy. Rock bringing up beating up Hogan and Austin and potentially Cena and being the only guy to ever do that. And of course Cena bringing up that, you know, he has to live with himself if he can't beat The Rock, and Rock, you know, even if he loses, he's going to, you know, promote G.I. Joe and so on and so forth. So that was sort of a nice focused ending to kind of bring back the stakes of, you know, what was truly important, or at least what I would consider important to the story. And of course, you know, all types of fans at all types of levels coming at this match drew a bigger pay-per-view audience than any other match in WWE history. So before we get into the match, I want to kind of get into some of the meat of the feud, some of the stuff that really clicked and connected with you personally, the stuff that didn't, and kind of hash some of that out a little bit.
Sure. Well, for just to start off, I have to commend them on their vision. At the outset, you know, when Rock returned in February of 2011, which was not at all a coincidence when Fair to Flair launched. I feel like they brought him in with a very long-term plan, and that plan was to be almost as obvious and as clear as possible about what they were going to use him for. The Rock is essentially the first of this new brand, this new tier of pro wrestler in WWE, and that is the sort of part-time guy that's that really only plays on the big stages, the WrestleManias, the Royal Rumbles, the Survivor Series. Is you don't we you know he's been back for 2 years, but we've never seen a match on Raw with him, that kind of thing. And that tier has grown to include guys like Brock Lesnar, Triple H, The Undertaker. And so I have to really commend them on really sticking with this vision of, we have this guy for maybe a few appearances. How do we make that mean something? How do we do something that's different than, say, what we used to do with Foley, where he would show up 2-3 times a year in sort of kind of middling okay success, right? So what they did was say, we're going to announce a match, and we're going to have a match, but Rock isn't actually ready to do a match, and he doesn't have time to do a match right now, and he's not going to be around, but we're going to have this hanging over WWE the whole time, this idea that in a year we're going to have this match with The Rock. And I recall very incorrectly assuming that the Miz versus Cena match at 27 would somehow morph into Rock Cena, and it did. I was just wrong by a year.
Nobody's perfect.
No, nobody's perfect. So I'm impressed by it. What I'm less impressed by is some of the follow through and how the character of The Rock actually is. For the most part, I don't know who relates to that. Like, I don't know what the demographic is that relates to The Rock's character. I know who cheers for The Rock, and that is many, many, many thousands of people. but I don't know what they really see in the character other than a sort of nostalgic feeling or a feeling of following obviously the dominant guy on the show. You know, that has a pull at times.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm not really sure what's there. Whereas I found more and more and more, I was sort of cheering for Cena in the story. And I don't know that that's what they were trying to get at, especially from maybe the older audience. I feel like that's the sort of polarization they were trying to get, was that the younger audience was going for Cena and the older audience was going for The Rock. But the more The Rock like opened his mouth and said words, the less I was in his corner.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the 2000 DX.
Mm, where, 2000 or like 2006?
I'm sorry, 2006.
Sure.
Yes.
Because 2000 DX was just the Road Dogg, I think.
Right, yeah, pretty much, yeah. I'm sorry, 2006 DX, where it's these guys coming back into these characters they played when they were a decent bit younger, and it connecting with the audience, but it feeling like really rehashing old things and not bringing all that much interesting to the table. But yet when they had the matches, I generally enjoyed them. It was just feeling like, well, in this, in for DX's case, it was just a thing of incessantly doing it every single week, and Rock hasn't had that problem because he's not on the show that much. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I think is the case. I don't think The Rock has grown at all since he was back. It's like he's you know, he's 7-8 years older, yet he is still there's no. It just doesn't seem there's been any like advancement to him at all, and there's nothing, and even he's the same as he was the day that he came back too. I mean, he's been you know, on the show for, you know, a couple years now, but it hasn't you know, it doesn't feel like that character has grown at all. He's just there to, for the most part, to, you know, be silly and to entertain the fans and to be goofy and all of that. And occasionally I'll have that serious moment where it's like, oh no, I'm serious business. This all means this. I'm vicious and I'm, you know, I'm 6'4 and 280 pounds and all that. But, mm-hmm. It's like to have a character that you rely on that much, even if they're not around every week, I feel like you need a little bit more depth. And I just don't feel like there is that. Maybe not depth, but you just need a little bit more authenticity, maybe.
Well, it's so easy to see it, too, because you contrast it with other sort of aging performers on the show. Like I mentioned earlier, Triple H, The Undertaker, Lesnar, who are all, you know, 20 minutes away on the same show and are playing such different characters than they were the last time The Rock was around in 2003.
Right.
They've really evolved and matured and hardened, and The Rock is still very much that, like, 10, like, yeah, just from back then, the same character. And WWE has changed. It's a very different show than it used to be. And I find Rock's sort of crass humor and you know, it's just like grabbing things out of pop culture and melding them in with an insult. I find it to be really coarse in comparison to the rest of the show. Now, there have been some shining moments. I found the sort of soliloquy he gave before his – this is going into the future a little bit for the match we're talking about. But right before he fought CM Punk for the title, I thought that was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That was so great. But for the most part, when he's been in the ring with Cena, he's really, I don't know, he's really devolved.
Yeah, it's just not, it's weird because you talked about not seeing where, you know, who relates to The Rock. I mean, he's just, you know, maybe he's just so big, and not just in the sense of being a big Hollywood star, but also, you know, his physique is so much bigger now, and he's so much like, you know, it's like he's, it's like it used to kind of be the Rock used to, the Rock as a persona used to kind of be a joke a little bit. Like it used to be sort of a joke that, you know, he was kind of telling. Now it's like consumed him all the way, and he can't be anything other than that, you know?
I agree a little bit, although I will say there are pros to the whole bigger than life thing. And I think we should get to that when talking about the sort of intro to this match.
Sure.
Which is, I think maybe the best use of music at WrestleMania, maybe ever.
Okay.
I don't know that that enough props have been given to the stadium they used in Miami.
Yeah.
I've been to WrestleManias live, and I've heard music being played at WrestleManias live, and 100% of the time it's terrible. Mm-hmm. Because giant domed arenas and giant open arenas have really bad acoustics.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, especially when they're not set up for a rock concert, when you have a whole wrestling stage and then just to the left you have a stage where some guys play guitar.
Sure.
Right? Like when it never sounds good. The worst one was WrestleMania 18, where they had those two new metal bands playing.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. But they had these two entrances, first for Cena, then with Rock, and they had these two bands, two performers, I guess.
Yeah.
They played a song, and then the theme song for the wrestler played.
Yes.
And then the wrestler came out. First of all, such a great decision to not have them come out to, like, the song that the band was playing.
Right.
I really like that they kept it to the theme song. I feel like they learned that lesson, maybe, from, you know, Triple H having Motorhead and that kind of thing. Like, it's a nice moment, but it plays really poorly on the DVD a few months later when you no longer have the rights to that song.
Yes.
Have you seen The Undertaker vs. Triple H WrestleMania 27 on DVD afterwards?
I have not, no.
They replace Undertaker's Johnny Cash song with his normal theme music, and that wonderful moment entrance is ruined.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's really expensive to get those, but I just kind of feel like, you know.
Yeah. No, obviously it's different when the band is there live. You sort of have the implicit right at that point, but still.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, the first band that plays is first of all, they like the first person to get introduced for the main event is P. Diddy,
which yes.
I think is great. And they announce him as like six things, and one of them is entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And, like, that's important to tell people.
It's Miami, WrestleMania, Miami, WrestleMania.
That's all he says.
Yes. And then
he was there for
MGK.
MGK.
Who's very skinny.
Oh. See, when I heard the song, and they've been playing the song for, like, a year leading up to it, and I thought that was a pretty good, like, WrestleMania theme song, actually.
Sure.
I like that they've really gone away from nu metal as the soundtrack of wrestling.
Yes, I completely agree. I'm not necessarily always a fan of the songs they do now, but that's a much better than the nu metal. I'm very glad that era hopefully is behind us forever.
Exactly. Like, and as much as I'm not really a fan of like auto-tuned hip hop for the most part, far preferred over the nu metal.
Yeah, it's at least somewhat. At least it feels contemporary.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the nu metal, when it was popular, it felt very niche, and it felt very dated in a sense, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So MGK, which, yeah, super skinny, both the guy and the girl, way too skinny. Those two need some food. PD needs to feed those two.
He really does. Yeah, I agree.
They play and they sound great.
Yeah.
They sound so good. Even if you don't like the band, you have to admit, like, the acoustics sound good.
Mm.
And, like, the whole show sounded great.
Yeah.
Like, you could actually hear the fans, which is kind of rare for an open bowl show.
Yeah.
They sound great. And MGK says that tonight is about underdogs. And an underdog is a guy who you don't expect to win. And he's an underdog, And I think he says Detroit's an underdog too. And John Cena's an underdog. And when he says John Cena's an underdog, the whole place boos like crazy.
Yes.
And you immediately tell, like they tried their best to paint this as a 50-50 proposition, right? They really did, right? They didn't turn one guy good and one guy bad. They kept them both on equal footing this whole time. And
yeah.
They gave both equal time on the mic, equal time in the ring, yada, yada, yada. They painted them both as equals. That giant Madison Square Garden poster in Times Square painted them as like these giant gods fighting, right? But the second someone says John Cena, all like 400 million people in the stadium just boo like nuts.
Yeah. And, you know, and obviously, you know, they're in Miami, they're in Rock's home turf. That's part of it as well. And this happens to Cena at most big shows, you know. So this is not a huge surprise, but yes, this is very much, you know, destroying the narrative that they've built.
It really is.
You know,
it really is.
I mean, and I don't think anyone was really necessarily buying that they were going to totally be equals in here. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely trying to keep them on kind of a similar level. And I noticed in the promos building up to it, Cena gets a lot more. I don't know, maybe not more than Rock overall, but more on Rock than he was getting in their first kind of the build-ups to the previous WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, exactly. So Cena comes out, and you know, he runs down. He's wearing green.
Yeah,
green's the.
But before he comes down, he talks to the camera.
That's right. This is the thing he does.
Very well. It's also very WCW.
It's so WCW, right?
Yeah.
Nobody talks to the camera.
Yeah.
On WWE. It was always like Harlem Heat and Hulk Hogan, and those guys always talk to the camera.
Everyone talked to the camera in WCW. It was
yeah.
great. It was I loved it.
I still miss Corner Cam Guy.
Yeah. That was great too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and then he said something about the scoreboard, which I didn't really.
He says there are people behind the scoreboard.
Ah, okay.
And he points at the WrestleMania sign, which is not a scoreboard. And,
right.
And throughout the night was not showing any kind of score because it's wrestling and not something that scores are kept in.
Well, you know.
Whatever.
And then,
maybe when they're doing football, maybe that's where the scoreboard is.
Could very be possible, yeah. And he says, once in a lifetime, I think so. And then he starts running. And the
and
camera follows
running.
Behind him as he runs to the ring. It's a nice, you know, visual moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I like afterward we have the camera focusing on Cena as he's sort of doing a little bit of prep in the ring. He's running the ropes and he's doing a little bit of dancing too.
Sure.
Like I feel like this is Cena very maybe not super subtly, but this is kind of him playing the heel a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit later. I want to sort of couch that.
Okay, all right.
Because I think there are a couple of moments where he plays a very subtle heel.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of subtle heel Cena.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. But next up, we get Flo Rida.
Yeah, and I know this song because this song's on Just Dance 4.
I know this song because it didn't stop playing for like 6 months straight, literally everywhere there was air.
Okay, well there's that
yeah.
too. But I am lucky enough to live in places that don't have air, so I was not super familiar with it until I bought Just Dance 4 and then danced with it repeatedly with my daughter.
Aww.
We do enjoy our dancing games.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She likes Skrillex the best. She likes rock and roll. I think Skrillex has done some WWE too, maybe, but I could be wrong. Like, he's done some sort of, like, song for them, or he was on some sort of event. I don't know. But anyway.
Sure.
Yeah.
You should get her into the Deadmau5.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, try it. My local boy gotta represent. The,
okay.
Yeah, I'm so too old for this kind of music.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Flo Rida comes out, and again, sounds great. Even
yeah.
if you don't like him, you have to admit for WrestleMania, this sounds great.
Yes.
And it looks great. Like, they finally figured out how to do this. God knows, they've been trying since the first WrestleMania to do this, and yeah. They finally figured it out.
There you
looks
go.
Looks great.
I bet it would have been great for Liberace, you know.
Rockettes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Flo Rida has his own Rockettes?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Who are all, because they're not wearing heels and because Flo Rida is really tall and The Rock is really tall, they all look really short, but I'm sure they're like 5'5".
Sure.
Right?
It's a good size for a lady.
It's a good size for anyone.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, so I like talk about The Rock's entrance.
Okay. The Rock comes out and he looks 1,000 feet tall.
Yes.
And it's all perspective because he's surrounded by women who are 5'5", like sure. Normal sized women, and The Rock's just a tall guy. And like they showed The Rock without a shirt on before, and they showed The Rock in a match 6 months earlier at Survivor Series, but he looks so big here.
Yeah.
And I think the people who cheer The Rock, I think this has a lot to do with it. His just like actual size and how he walks and how he presents himself is so much bigger than like everyone in the world. And he comes out and he's just so confident. He's, you watch the CM Punk entrance from the Royal Rumble and Rock is just dancing and he's just like jumping around everywhere. Here he's like he's very grounded, you know, very focused, very businesslike. He comes down, he does the raising the hand thing, and then they get in the middle of the ring together. And I actually took a screenshot of this. We could maybe put it in the show notes if you want. But he starts to walk towards Cena, and the camera pans behind his shoulder. And this is a wonderful film trick. If you want to make someone in front of a guy look tiny, you pan behind a guy's shoulder. And The Rock looks like a giant here next to Cena. Like The Rock is like 3 inches taller than Cena.
Right.
But his shoulder is like a foot higher than Cena's shoulder.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but that's how they present it. And it looks amazing. Rock looks he looks like a boulder compared to Cena.
And he's a large, massive man. But I want to get into it a little bit later about the idea of The Rock conveying viciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something that Lawler says a few minutes in when Cena starts beating Rock up. Lawler sort of – every now and then he actually spews a little bit of real old wrestler wisdom. And he says that just because someone looks good doesn't mean much.
Yes.
It's a little bit of like, oh, Lex Luger's in great shape. Like, it's a little bit of like, oh, Rock looks amazing, but he hasn't wrestled a match. He hasn't wrestled a match, like a singles match, in 10 years.
Yeah.
So he probably sucks, and he's probably going to get winded really quickly.
Right. And then, of course, is the great, the great truth, the great comments that are real without meaning to be real.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
And I do recall reading a few things when the match first happened was that a lot of people complained that The Rock did very much seem slow and winded and not ready. I don't know how much I agree with that, having watched this again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll overall say that this match is 1,000 times more enjoyable the second time, not live, months later.
Yeah.
Outside of the hype of it all.
I don't know if I had it as big. I think I liked it more the second time, but I don't think I disliked it the first time as much as apparently everyone else or a lot of other people did.
Well, I think you and I have talked about this before. If you take a match out of the order of the show, sometimes it can be a lot more enjoyable and sometimes less.
That's true. Wrestling is sometimes my favorite wrestling.
Exactly. And this match followed Punk Jericho.
Sure. I don't think immediately, but it was but that was obviously on, and even bigger, it was
Taker Triple H, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And so. even after watching Roxina, I watched Punk Jericho again and Taker Triple H again, and I still have to put Roxina third, like a distant third.
I would agree with that, yeah. But I do think it's a solid match, a pretty good match that delivers on the big beats and it tells a good story and has a great finish and has a pretty awesome performance by John Cena.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we so once The Rock he does his thing in the ring, Cena's body language in the other corner is unimpressed. Cole refers to this as two faces of their generations, two icons in their primes. We get Cena talking trash in the ring, saying that you better be ready. I'm ready. Maybe that's not really talking trash, but he's saying things. So
He is saying words.
He is saying words. There's a decent length amount of time of them standing in the ring and looking around to the crowd. I find this interesting in WWE matches because we can probably agree that the most famous stare down in wrestling of all time is Andre Hogan. They stand, they walk toward each other, they look into each other's eyes. There's some jawing. If I remember this correctly, Andre points his finger, and then Hogan like starts shaking and starts hulking up right away.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I, no question, the most famous.
Yes. What I want to say about this real quick is that I do not think that the two of them look in each other's eyes once. It's all about looking away from each other and kind of looking around at the crowd.
Yeah, I was going to say that this probably reflects Hogan Rock more than Hogan Andre. Because when Hogan and Rock did their match at WrestleMania 18, they got in the middle of the ring and they looked at each other and they were doing that, you know, it's not a famous wrestling stare down thing. And then they were affected by the crowd, right? Because I don't think anybody expected the Toronto crowd to react the way they did to this match. And both Hogan and Rock started looking at the crowd instead of themselves. They were actually taken aback by it all. And ever since then, WWE has used that as a thing. And they use it here. They get them in the middle of the ring. They get them looking at each other for a second, but then they sort of turn and look at the crowd, and they include the crowd in the moment.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's very cool.
Yeah, but I don't know. But I think they don't lock eyes at all, and that's odd to me.
Mm. Well, because doesn't that sort of follow the theme? This isn't really about Roxina. And the announcers say that throughout the whole match. This is about the fans having a good time. This is all about the fans.
Yeah, but they've been but that goes against what they've been building with. You know, this Cena needs to win this. This is the most important thing in his life, and you know, if he does, he's a huge failure. And like, I feel like they've done a pretty good job of actually building stakes in the match toward the end there. Like, I get what you're saying, but I think that I don't know. I think maybe WWE has pushed both narratives at times, and there's obviously dissonance between the two. And that's not unusual for WWE or for lots of forms of entertainment. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of gray in Rock's goatee. So
just a little. It's nice.
Just a little bit. Yeah. You know, it's handsome. You know, he's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of gray. I don't have a goatee, but if I had one, I would probably have a little bit of gray in it. So, and I'm quite a bit younger than Rock is. So,
I do like that Rock looks aged, right? Like when he shuts his mouth, he is really an imposing figure. He's got this amazing vein on the side of his temple, and that comes into effect later in that awesome STF.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Rock has just so many little character features that only happen when you're, you know, over 40.
Sure, sure. So we have a long lockup with a little bit of movement. Cena pushes Rock backward. Rock falls back. Then another lockup, and this time Cena is sent back. He immediately smirks. Then we have Rock getting a flurry after a headlock. He kips up after Cena gets a little bit of control, then gets a couple of arm drags and an Oklahoma roll for two. And Cena has a really nice look on his face right afterward, like being stunned that Rock has pulled this off, putting up his fingers for two and breathing the sigh of relief. Just a nice little moment from Cena, and kind of one of those things where, the subtle heel thing is going.
What do you think about the collarable tie up in general as a way to start a match?
I think in this match it's suitable because this isn't really a match about hate. It's a match about competing. And I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess it doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of logical sense to try to start off with it. It would kind of make more sense to do something where you would be an advantage as opposed to something where you and your opponent would be at an equal advantage disadvantage.
Yeah, I've never particularly thought the collarable tie-up was a logical move for anyone, but it does show good sportsmanship, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense in a match that's more about it's more about winning or losing as opposed to about like hating someone and wanting to hurt them and wanting to kill them. So I guess just like one of those old wrestling tropes that it sort of lived past its usefulness, but no one ever came up with a better idea to start a match.
I'm just waiting for someone to utilize the three-way collar elbow and tie-up that DDP, Raven, and was it Saturn or who was the third guy in that match?
It was Benoit.
It was Benoit. Yeah. The three the triple collar elbow tie-up. I'm just waiting for someone to pull that out again.
I do not think they'll probably reference the match that we just discussed, though, if it ever happens.
No, probably not.
No. That was Uncensored 98, kids, by the way, I believe. So,
History.
yes. So, Cole immediately wonders if Cena maybe was not taking The Rock seriously enough, but Lawler surprisingly politely but rightfully basically dismisses the point without calling Cole an idiot.
I recall in the review I wrote for WrestleMania 28, kind of giving a little bit of a hat tip to the commentators for not being the annoying sons of bitches they were for like the whole year before that. They did a good job, and Cena's like subtle heelness in this match is reflected in Lawler too, because Lawler is in Cena's corner the whole time. If you listen to Lawler's commentary, I don't think he once prefers Rock over Cena.
That's interesting. I didn't really notice that. And that's funny because, Lawler for in his as a commentator in WWE was pretty staunchly pro Rock most of Rock's career. Like he was almost like personally the guy who would cheer for Rock in almost every situation.
Absolutely. And he's not against The Rock in any overt way, but if you listen to Lawler, almost all of his comments when he's talking about experience or ring rust or what they're thinking has to do with sort of a ring general preference. And what Lawler is for, he's a good guy sometimes, he's a bad guy sometimes, but he's for the wrestler who shows up every day over the guy who's there sometimes.
Yeah, I can see that. That's interesting observation. And yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that's actually a really good point.
And I'm not reading into that too much, but I do think that there's, something there. Lawler has always been a defender of wrestling.
Sure. And it makes sense that he would kind of play the staunch the WWE loyalist to a certain extent because he's just been there for so long now. So then we get Rock hitting a shoulder block and then Cena hitting a very fancy leapfrog and a hip toss. You can count on a fancy leapfrog from Cena in a big match, and he still gets really high on that leapfrog.
Cena has a wonderful vertical leap.
He does.
I'm sure Michael Cole used to actually say that during Cena matches. I think he that was one of the things he pointed, like when Cena was kind of new, they would point out how high he could jump, but he really can.
Oh, yeah. He has, I mean, he is, pretty incredible athlete, So, it's funny, The Rock is only like 6 years older than Cena, or maybe 7 years older than Cena.
Two different generations.
Exactly. But they're both in their prime. I like that. Like, they're both different generations, but they're both in their prime. That is emphasized as
That's
well.
right.
But
Well, they should be.
it's one of those funny wrestling things, though. Like Arn Anderson and Kevin Nash are roughly the same age. But of course, Arn Anderson seems much older than Kevin Nash because he was a star, 10 years before Kevin Nash was. And he looks older too. But like, it's one of those weird, like, wrestling age matters a lot when you become popular, not so much your actual age, to a certain extent.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's all
Right.
perception.
Right. Exactly. But,
Yeah. And
so,
you don't think for a second that The Rock could have put a little bit of like just for men or whatever in his goatee if he wanted to. He wanted to look older than Cena.
maybe, yeah. I guess, or did he just didn't care? He's fine with
I
it a little
suppose
bit,
there's that too.
but I yeah, I don't. Yeah, it'd be interesting if that were a conscious choice. I don't know. I don't know if I have a hard time believing that it was, but who knows? So we get sort of a moment where tempers flare a little bit. Rock gets a. They both kind of trade some hard blows. Then Rock gets a double leg takedown, sort of setting up the sharpshooter. Cena bails and goes out of the ring. And I noticed a couple of those shots, and particularly from Cena through most of the match. Like, his punches look a little bit crisper than they generally do. Like, I feel like that they're just a little bit tighter and a little bit working a little bit like stiffer than I'm used to either guy seeing.
I'm not sure I noticed that so much, but I was watching it on a very tiny screen.
Sure. So another time where Cena's, bailing out the offense and is kind of playing defense here and being the heel. Cena back in the ring, Cena sends Rock into the corner and gets a couple of running shoulder thrusts, and then a big clothesline.
Oh, rough. That was a rough clothesline too, wasn't it? That looked really painful.
Yeah, again, just, I think they're hitting a little bit tighter than normal. And then Cena then works the ribs with a bear hug on the mat. And this is when Lawler makes the point that you were talking about earlier about looks sometimes being deceiving. And we're in the bear hug for a decent amount of time. An example, as we'll see throughout, of definitely taking our time in these mat holds and in these things, and because they're doing a 30, I think it's a 32-minute match, which is difficult under any circumstance, much less when you haven't wrestled in 8 years. So.
Now, what do you think there? Do they really need to go half an hour, or do you think the fans of these two would have been fine with a 15-minute match?
I think they would have been fine with it. It's sort of an odd. It does seem like an odd decision. I think if they'd have cut 5 minutes from it, I think it would have been a better match. I don't think they needed to cut 15, but
Oh, I like it just fine, but I'm thinking of like the Rock wrestling fan or the John Cena fan. Like, do they need half-hour matches?
I don't know. I think there's an expectation in a WrestleMania main event that you have to go maybe not 30 minutes, but I think you got to go more than 20.
I don't think the year before went more than 20, like Miz and Cena.
Well, that wasn't a very good match either.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And I do think we do expect more out of The Rock than we do out of The Miz. Although they both share the same first name.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So eventually Rock fights out of it, but then Cena plays dirty by pulling down the ropes and sending Rock over. Then he drops.
It is that kind of match where dropping the rope is playing dirty, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, then he further plays dirty by dropping Rock's ribs on the barricade and then the announce table.
We're still well within the rules, though, even with, like, I don't think they, either of them even come close to breaking a rule.
I agree. I mean, we are, yes, but we are also, but you have to agree that Cena's being sneaky and he's being dirty. And this is also, like, okay, this stuff would have been very, very normal transition, basic stuff in the Attitude Era. No one would have given any thought to it. In 2012, it's a little bit, and in this context, it's a little bit more dirt.
Well, and this is, again, this really confirms our sort of like subtle bad guy Cena thing, because he's the one who ratchets up the violence in the match.
Yes.
Right? Every single time that the that it escalates, it's Cena doing the escalating. And I don't know how much people listen to Joe Drilling and the Whatever and everything, but he's constantly talking about how it's the bad guy's job to make things more violent.
Right.
To because he can't win on equal footing, so he has to take a shortcut. This isn't really Cena taking shortcuts necessarily, but it is him taking very small, tiny cuts at the fairness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he's not exactly breaking the rules, but he's definitely taking the match out of what had been a fairly scientific, you know, for 2012 wrestling type match, and brought and increased the violence. Definitely.
Exactly.
So Kyoto asks The Rock if he wants to continue. Mike Kyoto, the referee. And we're 8:25 into the match, by the way. Imagine if The Rock had somehow decided that he could not continue
like,
8 minutes.
You know what? I'm done.
Yep. Sorry, John Cena, you are the better man.
Come to think of it.
So anyway, we're back in. Cena lands a hard punch and hits a belly-to-belly suplex, of all things, for two. So Cena increasing the arsenal of his moves. I don't see a lot of belly-to-bellies from him. Then another bear hug, lifting Rock up a few times. Rock tries to punch out, but Cena tightens it in. You kind of notice that the crowd, which had been really hot for the first 2 minutes, is fading a little bit. I mean, they're
in a bear hug. What do you want the crowd to do?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. I'm just saying, hey, I'm just making an observation.
Right? Honestly, I don't think it was the crowd getting bored at all. I think it was the crowd sitting down and going, you know what, this match is going to go for a while.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily meant to be criticism. It was just an observation.
I know you're very critical of crowds, Jason.
I'm not saying that they should have been, you know, that they should have been loud, but, you know, it's okay, Miami. I'm not making fun of you. I promise. I'm sure I will come up with a reason to make fun of you later, but right now I'm not making fun of you. So, and well, there you go. Dueling chance for Cena again. So we have some dueling chance. So, yeah. That's very creative, guys. Way to go. So, Rock licks his hand and then punches out of the bear hug, which, you know, if you just lick your hand, that gives you magic that you can punch out of things.
The science holds up.
I believe so. Then he lands a DDT for two. However, Cena is able to get up and get a series of punches in the corner. However, Rock lands his punches, gets a flying clothesline, a spine buster, teases the people's elbow, but then Cena, it turns it into an STF attempt. However, he's not able to. He instead hits some shoulder blocks and the proto bomb, sets up the You Can't See Me, and lands the five knuckle shuffle. I find it funny that the euphemism for masturbation survived the PG era.
Yeah, that one's still there. His thing isn't called the FU anymore. It's called the Attitude Adjustment.
Right.
But five knuckle shuffle stuck around.
It did. Maybe it's just subtle enough that WWE.
I think it is. I think it's just a little under the radar.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Of course, they're going to listen to this and be like, "What? Really?"
No one from WWE listens to my show.
And then watch like a couple of Mondays from now, it'll be called like the Punch Drop or something.
that's creative. I think Punch Drop should definitely be the thing that we got.
The Punch Drop.
Just like we now call Work Rate Move Speed. I think definitely.
Who's calling it that?
I call it that because it's
Move Speed.
Move Speed. That's the term now. So.
Is there a unit of measurement for that?
It just
there should be. There should you, could,
it's
you should
either,
have like three.
It's either good move speed or bad move speed. That's all we need.
One or the other. Okay.
Yeah. So I think the move speed here is pretty good so far.
No complaints.
Yeah. So Cena does some standing and waiting for The Rock to get up. He attempts the add to adjustment, but The Rock slips out, and then both of them land a double clothesline. And they,
good old double clothesline.
Yeah. And they lay around for a while. Then they exchange punches and blows, trading bombs, as Jerry Lawler says.
Have you noticed the kind of large number of really old wrestling moves in this match that don't really get used much anymore?
For example?
Well, the bear hug, the double clothesline.
True. Belly to belly. Well, I don't feel like. I feel like
the belly to belly suplex.
Belly to belly is not. Yeah. There's a few. I don't know if it's a massive number, but it is. They definitely, given the amount of time they have, they definitely go beyond their arsenal a little bit. Definitely the bear hug stands out.
Sure. I wonder how much of that is WWE thinking, well, we're going to have a lot of people watching this show that haven't watched wrestling in a while. Maybe we want to ratchet the moveset back a little bit.
Or at least incorporate some more. I feel like they just needed to fill time more than anything. And to have moves that weren't incredibly taxing on either guy, particularly Rock. That would be my guess, but
I'm a little surprised then that Cena didn't pull out like the Yokozuna nerve pinch.
You know, every match needs a nerve pinch. I feel like if John Cena ever becomes a great villain, and I know you don't think that he's ever going to be a villain, but I think that he has one of the great villains of all time ever in him. I think he needs to do nerve pinches.
I'm okay, fine. I will put an asterisk on my argument against villain John Cena. If his like mid match move is the Yokozuna nerve pinch, where he just stands there like grinning like an asshole for like 5 minutes,
that would be great.
That would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the key thing that in the previous sequence is Rock landed some of his key stuff. Cena landed some of his key stuff, and then Rock was able to withstand the five knuckle shuffle. So Rock seemingly wins the trading bombs exchange, in which there is a Yabu chant. But Cena is able to counter the spit punch with an attitude adjustment, which lands, but only gets two. And the crowd is extremely hot for these for this sequence, and is relieved that the Rock has been able to kick out at two.
They keep panning to the crowd too, eh? They cut to the crowd a lot.
Yeah. I mean, particularly in like the big reactions, obviously, and the big, like after the big moves, they definitely did a lot of. I didn't notice it more than usual, but I wasn't really thinking of that either. I mean, it's a big crowd, and it's a crowd that's engaged for 95% of the match. So
it's true. And they what I like about the panning shots is they'll just keep panning, and the crowd doesn't end. Like there's just so much. There's so many people there.
There are,
and it like they've had bigger WrestleManias, but I don't know that they've had WrestleManias that looked like there were more people there than that one.
It's a newer stadium. It's definitely a fancy one. And aesthetically pleasing. I would agree with you on that.
Gorgeous. They're gonna have a hard time topping it this year.
Yeah. They're definitely gonna top the weather, I would imagine, in New Jersey.
No kidding.
Yeah. So Cena, frustrated with the ref at his finishing move not being a success, looks anguished to the crowd. The Rock pops up maybe a little too quickly for my taste and lands the Rock Bottom, which also gets two. And at that point, we're 16 minutes and 30 seconds into the match. Another, exhausted, shot by Rock not being able to land his finishing move. But, it's really about, I don't know. I guess if Rock had won it with that, I don't know. I feel like that wouldn't have felt like enough.
Yeah, it wasn't earned.
Yeah. And granted, if they'd had a 16 minutes to do the match, they would have done a different pace, I'm sure. But I feel like, yeah, that would not have felt right. So,
Yeah, exactly.
Rock lands some repeated elbows in the corner, but Cena gets a side slam. Lawler throughout has been trying very hard to sell this as a classic, which isn't like necessarily completely off base because the crowd's invested in it and it's worked fine so far. Cena goes very, very carefully to the top rope, waits quite a long time for Rock to get up and get into position. He finally does, but man, he lands like really badly on Rock's neck, where Rock's head kind of goes straight down, and it seems like it could have been a dangerous situation. Also, Rock tears his quad, or not his quad, but he tears his knee. I think it's meniscus. I forget the exact injury, but he tears his knee on there, which is there's still close to 15 minutes left in the match when this happens. I was thinking it was later in the match, but it's pretty, it's about the midway point. So yeah, so yikes, that one looked pretty bad, and it gets two. So then there's another attitude adjustment attempt, but Rock gets the ropes. Then Rock is able to get the sharpshooter, which is not his best move.
Yeah,
Cena.
that's for sure. He sort of he, like gently applies a sharpshooter is what I would say.
Grab the knee. All you have to do is grab the knee and
That's
hold
all you
it.
gotta do.
All you gotta do.
There's
Like,
a knee pad right there. There's lots to grab on that knee pad.
what's your Bret Hart match in your life?
And one Bret Hart match. That's all he's gotta watch.
One after it is the sharpshooter, so one after 1990, but there are plenty, and
And
many of them are really great.
the thing is, like, applying a sharpshooter at WrestleMania immediately brings people back to WrestleMania 13, right? You can't help it but compare it. And every single sharpshooter after the WrestleMania 13 sharpshooter is a bad sharpshooter.
Well, it's really not as good of a sharpshooter.
And Cena tries his best.
I mean, he teases a tap out. He struggles. He's eventually able to get to the ropes. It would be like a if Austin is a 10 on the sharpshooter drama scale, this was about a 4. There's another he lo but Rock is able to lock it in again. This time Cena screams a little more intensely. It's not quite Flair in the figure four, but it's maybe 70% of that. And he struggles a little bit more intensely to get to the ropes, and that was actually a bit better drama. So the second time worked a little bit better for me. Then outside the ring, and Rock sends Cena into the steps, and Cole. Now he prefaces this by saying he's one of the biggest movie stars in the world, and then he goes into how vicious Rock can be and how he kind of has a temper and these things, and he's big and he's physical and so forth. And I think it's interesting that, with everything we've talked about The Rock, how big he is, how dominant he seems, how strong he is, and all of these things, conveying viciousness is something he's never really done, other than maybe hitting Mick Foley in the head with a chair 12 times. But outside of that moment, I've never felt like just using his physicality, it's never seemed to me like he's that conveyed viciousness in a way that a lot of other wrestlers are able to convey.
I don't know, man. You've heard him sing.
There is that.
So, it's not all bells and whistles there.
All right, well, I can't argue with that. So Cena comes in the ring, gets a sunset flip, but then turns it into an STF. A nice STF too. I mean, okay, not like a William Regal STF, but for a John Cena STF, like it's pretty good. It's flashing pretty well. Rock does some nice drama trying to get to the ropes.
Yeah, it's clear at least John Cena's met William Regal.
That's true. He has maybe watched a match or two.
Right, but he has no idea who Bret Hart is. Or The Rock has no idea who Bret Hart is.
He does, which is weird because they were in the same promotion together for a while. But
Quite some time.
yeah, at least a year or more. But So Rock tries to get to the rope. Cena then is able to drag him to the center of the ring. Then Rock gets sleepy, starts fading. The hand goes down once and twice, but not three times. Which is
Really close though, like 2.8.
sure. Then he is able to
Oh,
pull.
this is the other one I wanted to say. Like, this is a really old wrestling thing that they don't really do anymore. That like one, two, is he gonna drop his hand the third time? No, he's kicking out.
Point.
Like,
You
they
don't
haven't done that in forever.
as much. Yeah, that's true. The tapping out has kind of made that less relevant.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and we're 24 minutes into the match, by the way, roughly. So, okay. So, this is kind of a point in which we do definitely see The Rock getting fatigued, because Rock sort of jumps himself onto Rock's back, and then Rock sort of drops back and hits a Samoan drop. Like there appears to be no effort at all on Rock's part made to lift Cena up. It's all just Cena basically jumping. Then more lying down, the ref does the double count and they're up to eight. They do some staggering punches in the middle of the ring. Rock grabs the Rock Bottom, but it's countered. The Attitude Adjustment also countered. Rock gets the spine buster, sets up for the people's elbow, hits it, but it only gets two. Then Cena gets sort of a sneaky inside cradle for two. There's more lying around. Cena grabs Rock's legs, hits a slingshot, and then gets a roll up for two. Cole bringing up the exhaustion that both men are conveying and certainly must be feeling.
Which at that point, 25 minutes, that's earned, I think.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. Like you can tell that Rock gets tired, but I don't necessarily feel like it's unjustified unduly in the match.
Right.
So Cena lifts up Rock, drives him into the corner, lifts him up for the superplex, but Rock pushes him down. Rock conveys fatigue, but then climbs to the top, hits a cross body. And then Cena, I've never failed to be impressed when he does this.
It's always so good.
Rolls through, picks him up, lifts him on his shoulders, and hits the Attitude Adjustment. Amazing. He does not get enough credit for just the amazing feats of strength that he's able to pull off sometimes. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that Cena doesn't have his flaws as a wrestler, but he can do some great things.
Oh, no question at all. Like that roll through, and that he's done that many times before, and it never stops being amazing.
Absolutely not.
And you almost never see it coming either.
Yeah, exactly. And he struggled with Rock, you know, with Rock's weight clearly doing it. But man, he just pulled it off and slammed him down, and it's great. And it gets two, of course. Cena complains about the count, says something to Kyoto about it being in Miami, whether it's just feeling like it's home field advantage or whether it's feeling like Kyoto's favoring Rock or whatever. He looks at his hands, giving me just a moment of flashback at Ultimate Warrior talking to his hands at WrestleMania 7.
He's gonna walk away.
But he and then he shrugs, decides, you know what, screw it. See, Rock's lying here on the mat. I'm gonna go for the people's elbow. And he tosses the elbow pad, he goes to the ropes, he goes to the other rope, and then Rock lifts up, lands the Rock Bottom, and that's it. And just what an amazing asshole moment from John Cena, and what an amazing moment for Rock to land, and the crowd just goes nuts.
I really do.
I think, I don't know, were you surprised by this result?
Well, they did their best to make it seem 50-50 going in, but I thought that if they're planning on using The Rock ever again, then he had to win.
Yeah.
Because if he comes back at like a year of build-up, he comes back and Cena beats him, Rock has no claim to be in wrestling.
Well, I don't know. He's beaten by like the number one guy, and he hadn't wrestled. I don't know. I mean, I think you could have done a story after that, but I agree. It makes a lot more sense with Rock coming back and doing more matches. I kind of thought
Right.
this was going to be it. So I kind of thought that it would be winning.
Yeah, if this was it, then Cena should have won. But because I kind of figured it wouldn't be it. I feel Rock's kind of there now. Like he's going to be here for a while. In the capacity that he's in. Like he's not going to be there every week. But, this kind of thing is now fitting in with his life better.
Sure.
So he's going to be there for a while. And so that it makes 100% sense for Rock to win. Coupled with the whole hometown thing, coupled with the fact that, it's WrestleMania and you want to send the fans home happy. And WrestleMania 28 was largely a send the fans home happy show overall.
And maybe a little bit of an apology for WrestleMania 27.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I would say it was a continuation of WrestleMania 27. I feel like WrestleMania 27 largely set up this show, and I've often wondered how wise it is to use the biggest show of the year to set up another biggest show of the year. But that's kind of what they did with 27, wasn't
Yeah, kind of like WrestleMania 4, actually.
it? Yeah, exactly. And that is sometimes the downside of long-term storytelling, is that what used to be a nice isolated event is now just part of an overall narrative.
Sure.
But you can't have it both ways, kids. You can either have big long saga stories where every chapter is maybe less significant, or you can have a bunch of tiny stories that don't add up to much. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
Oh,
And don't even try.
don't try.
No.
Don't try.
So.
But I just want to say a little bit about John Cena's hubris,
Yeah.
which really defines the entire story, I
Yes.
feel. And that is the little thread of villainy in John Cena. That little thread of he like winning is a little bit more important than being a good person. Not much. Not enough to be a bad guy. But just a little bit.
Sure.
And in that moment, winning wasn't the most important thing to him, but being better than The Rock was.
Yes.
And that's what ruined him.
So do you think he'll learn his lesson?
I think he's definitely learned a lesson, and I think WrestleMania 29 is going to be very interesting because of that.
Yeah. And we had a Twitter question. Well, we'll get into that toward. We'll make that the first question. But I do want to mention that we cut to Cena on the ramp, not really doing a whole lot, but looking a little bit sad. Then we cut to the Rock celebration. He hugs Mike Chioda, and then we get another picture of Cena being sad on the ramp. And then we get that wide shot where you see Cena resign, just disbelief, frustration, and then you get the big WrestleMania sign behind him, and they've used that image, a lot in the kind of the promoting, between WrestleMania 28 and WrestleMania 29 as Cena's bad year, even if what has happened has not always reflected that. But and Cole with a line of "I don't think there was even a loser in this thing," which is sort of weird given how heavily they're pushing Cena being sad and being the loser of this thing. But
And, having him just lost this thing.
right, exactly.
But that's another thing where they're like Rock and Cena don't matter. The fact that the fans had a good time,
And they do bring that
that's
back.
who won.
And Lawler says something about, "Well, I know that the winners is us and the fans,
Yeah, like that's who won.
That's true. Yeah. So,
And why not?
why not? Why not indeed? So, the other key moment, of course, is the Rock's promo the night after, talking about wanting to win the WWF Championship or WWF, God, WWE Championship, and wanting to come back at WrestleMania and announcing that he's going to be involved in more and obviously kind of be around for a while, and then we kind of know the story from there. But spoiler alert, he won the title. So, in case you didn't know that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry to ruin Royal Rumble 2013 for you.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah. Before we get into Twitter questions, I want to talk about, we're recording this, a little ways before WrestleMania 29, Rock Cena 2. What do you think is the ideal ending for this feud? And do you think it happens now, or do you think it happens after a third match?
Well, the ideal ending is the Miz wrecking everything. That's the ideal ending, but that's not what's going to happen.
All right.
Although I do like that even though Miz is a good guy now, he still doesn't like John Cena.
Yeah.
That's still great. But I probably realistically it's John Cena getting a little bit of retribution. But I don't know if that's going to happen necessarily, and I'm less and less convinced that that match is going on last.
Oh, really?
Really?
I find it very unlikely it won't go on last, but
All right.
I mean, I've been wrong. I've been wrong before, but I feel like I would be pretty shocked if it didn't go on last.
In the 28 years that WrestleMania has been a thing in our lives, there's never been a match go on last twice. Not once. There have been repeats, like there have been rematches, but they've never been on the same spot.
Well, that's
They've
what's not twice in a row.
not twice in a row. In fact, every single time it has been lower on the card. With the exception of Daniel Bryan and Sheamus, where they moved from the dark match to the opening match.
That's true. That's true.
But that is the only exception. Every single time that they've had a rematch,
Yeah.
that rematch has been lower.
Yeah. Hogan Andre was a weird exception because, of course, being in the tournament, it couldn't be last.
Right. And of course, people are going to yell at me and say, Austin, Rock, 15 and 17. But I don't really consider the Austin and Rock of WrestleMania 15 to be the same people as Austin Rock of WrestleMania 17.
Oh, okay.
Right? They're playing different characters at
Yeah.
those two points, and I consider those two separate things, whereas Rock and Cena are very much in the same mental space as they were a year ago.
True. Yeah, I obviously had that one in my head, but I was thinking in a row, but
Yeah, in a row, definitely. And even rematch wise, I don't like WWE changed so much between 15 and 17. I don't really consider those two paired.
yeah.
I think of 17 and 19, The Rock, Austin matches more connected.
Do you think that, 'cause 17 essentially erased 15 from relevance?
Oh yeah,
Like
entirely.
15 isn't a match that people talk about at all. And it's a pretty good match, but it's not a match anyone talks about. It's not really, it kind of was sort of like an inevitable thing. Rock was just kind of there. He was an important character, but he wasn't really like on Austin's level yet.
Yeah, he was not the guy.
Do you think that if 29 is like a blowaway classic match, you think people will forget about 28?
Well, I'm wondering, and this is just me wondering out loud, just guessing,
Okay.
if 29 is going to be a lot like 17.
Okay. See, I think there is a small possibility of that.
I think that little bit of John Cena that wants to win more than be good, I think that grows at WrestleMania 29.
Okay, I can see that. I don't know if I think it will happen, but I do think it's a possibility. And it would be certainly be fascinating.
Because for the most part, and this is the kind of thing with John Cena's character, is that for the most part, he's been able to be good and win. But with Rock, he can't do that.
Yeah.
So he has to make a choice.
Right. I think there's a lot of possibilities in Cena being the having to go bad and win and wrestling with that And much like Bret Hart did, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this, well, and this is that's the same thing Bret Hart did.
Yeah.
He couldn't stay good and be true to himself.
Right. And I do think there's enormous potential in Cena as a character grappling with that and being a righteous villain, so to speak, and being so certain of how right and how true and how noble and how moral he is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, and I think that'll be great. Now, I don't know, opponents-wise, it's kind of interesting because I don't know.
Well, he clearly fights The Miz again.
Well, you know.
I want more Miz and Cena, Jason.
Why? I don't understand.
I don't know.
We got
either.
Plenty of it. They had their one good match, the I Quit match. That's the one I like, you know.
That is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. All right, let's take some Twitter questions.
Yeah, there were a nice bevy of them.
Yeah. Let's see. I want to start with the one we were discussing, which I guess you basically answered this, but we'll just wait at Tim, who is at underscore the Bruiser, asks, was John Cena going for the people's elbow only to get countered for the loss, an important part of the story? And I think we both would say absolutely yes.
Utterly pivotal, yeah.
And I think it will be very important I'm sure they'll play off that in the next match, whether it's Cena becoming a villain or simply Cena not being cocky. You know, and not being overconfident, or not necessarily not giving in to his hubris. You know, whether he learns a lesson from that, you know, and stays a good guy is a very big possibility. Because I definitely could see Cena winning this as a good guy and then setting up a third match and then someone becoming a villain in that circumstance too. Although it would be less likely to be Cena.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Well, okay, did anyone, let's see, there was a question that I thought was, okay, if Cena beat Rock at WrestleMania 28, would they still have a match at WrestleMania 29? And this is from Matt Tucci at Tucci5.
That's a very good question. Maybe not. Maybe Rock would be doing something else. But I stand by my theory that if Rock lost, that would be it. It would have just been the one match.
Here's the thing. I think there's a really interesting story in the idea of The Rock having this big hyped up return, coming back and failing against Cena in the big match and wanting to prove himself again as a wrestler and kind of going back to his roots as a wrestler and kind of like wanting to build himself up, and obviously he couldn't be around full time, but kind of wanting to go through those steps and building himself back up and facing Cena again and wanting to vanquish that demon and wanting to prove that he's not an old guy, that he's not he's a movie star, but he's not, you know, he's not Hollywood. He's still his basic, you know, he's still The Rock, you know, thing. And I think that would have been a really interesting story to tell, and I think could have worked.
Yeah, could have.
Yeah,
that would have taken a lot more muscle than I think they want to expend right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think it would have been compelling. You know.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. We have Matthew Robertson. He is at Matt Robbo 1990. Do you think that their rematch taints the significance of this match? Would a one-off have been more iconic?
And then he goes, hashtag once in a lifetime.
Oh, that's what that meant.
That's, yeah, OIALT, once in a lifetime. Huh. Well, I mean, it does sort of put an asterisk on the whole once in a lifetime thing, that's for sure. But I don't know many examples where having a rematch ruined the first one in this sort of big fight environment. I mean, you know, Hogan and Andre fighting at WrestleMania 4 did nothing to diminish the importance of WrestleMania 3.
Right. And you know,
Hogan fighting Rock at No Way Out 2003 did nothing to make WrestleMania 18 less memorable. But you know, this is a little unprecedented, having a rematch for slightly higher stakes at the next big WrestleMania. I mean, it's for the title this time, so they're thinking it's more important, even though it certainly will not be. That's going to piss off a lot of people who are fans of the WWE Championship more than they are of any wrestler. But it's true, this match will be less important than the first one.
I don't know if it'll be less important. I
Okay.
it depends what happens.
Oh yeah, okay, fine. Yes, it depends what happens. It depends if the plot moves. But if it's just another match, if both of their characters stay the same afterwards,
Yeah, it's too hard for me to tell. I can't I don't know if
something's gotta shift. Like there has to be a seismic shift.
There has to be there. Yeah, there has to be some progression. I agree. For it, or if it's a significantly better match, and people remember it more, and it becomes sort of like the Austin Rock matches at 17, which also was a bigger match in terms of success and just enormous, more than even it being a greater match, but. I do think if it's a significantly better match, then I think it could become the bigger match people remember 10 years from now. So,
Let me find one
all
here.
right, you find one.
We got a few.
Yeah.
Masked Tweeter at Masked Tweeter asks, why is it I can remember the build-up as bad as it was, but not the match itself? I think that has something to do with what we were just saying, that it was that no real plot moved forward. John Cena and The Rock were essentially the same person before and after the match. Right? Like neither of them really changed that much. And I think that's maybe why. I would suggest he go watch the match again, because it's better than he remembers. I think that's probably true of anybody with this.
But I mean, it's not necessarily a super memorable match. I mean, it is very much a WWE formula match with the main event formula match, which with the issues and successes that formula has, it's a fine version of it. But does anything happen, other than maybe the finish, which I think is
They've done that finish before too. Like that's not a unique finish either.
No, I think the part of the finish of Cena being such the hubris part, I think, and the stuff with Cena kind of being healed, that's relatively unique. Although he did some of that in some of the feuds in which he was majorly booed, like Rob Van Dam, that kind of thing. But he would definitely play up the his you know it, the stuff that people boo him for. But yeah. All right, let's see. I want to get one of Rich's questions. Which of Rich's questions do you think is the best?
Well, my favorite, and this is why Rich is so great, is what is the meaning of Rock versus Cena?
There you go.
Which it like that's such a good question because it is something that WWE has put a lot of investment in. They have made it the main story of three WrestleManias in a row. Right? Rock, Cena.
Sure.
27, 28, and now 29. It means a ton to WWE. It means a lot of money to them. It means an overarching narrative that before WrestleMania 27, they didn't really have for a while. There was a very long stretch there where there was nothing unifying the show month to month. And Rock Cena, I feel like more than anything, is that top coat layer on pro wrestling that used to be Hulk Hogan in the 80s and was the NWO and Steve Austin in the 90s. Rock Cena is that right now. It's
Got it.
that, like, if you just see wrestling off in the distance 5 miles away, that's the thing you see.
Right. I think It's the battle over nostalgia. It's for some reason, I think it's been harder for WWE to shake its past than it ever used to be. Like, it took them a while to get past the Hogan era, but they did it. And eventually, not, a few years later, came on to bigger things. But even this, there was a few years, and there was a few years where there was kind of another mini boom fueled by Cena, Batista, to a lesser degree, Orton, and they've been fine and successful since then, even if wrestling isn't, a thing that is popular in popular culture right now. But for whatever reason, it's never been able to escape the shadow of that Attitude Era, and Rock, it represents that. I mean, he represents it better than anyone other than maybe Austin, but Austin, of course, doesn't wrestle. So, and he's also the most famous. He is the wrestler who has reached the greatest heights outside of professional wrestling. And it's sort of a combination of wrestling with that past and with wrestling with the greatest success that someone can reach without from wrestling essentially. And it's I guess it's that question of, I don't know about if it's what it means to be a wrestler, but it's what it means to what it means for wrestling to succeed itself, what it means for WWE to succeed itself, because WWE it craves this, it craves this mainstream attention, it craves being talked about, it craves being trended about. WWE wants to be part of the cultural conversation, and Rock Cena is its best bet to be part of that conversation, and it's taken advantage of that in some smart ways, and it's been weird about that. It's run the whole gamut of
Like super needy social media begging.
right, exactly. It's kind of
Please love us.
brought the the best and a lot of the worst out of WWE, in that way, it's really dominated things, because because the initial Rock Cena stuff, if I'm not mistaken, was around the time in which they really started pushing Twitter and social media heavily. I mean, I'm not saying they weren't doing it before then, but I mean that was really around the time in which they really started emphasizing it. In fact, you know what? We've been looking for an era to call WWE for the last few years. It's the social media era.
Yeah, let's keep looking.
You don't think so?
Yeah, it. I mean, yes, they're utilizing it as a major tool, but they
They're
always did. They always did.
obsessed with it, and it wasn't as much of an obsession as it became. And obviously, that's part of that's because social media became more popular. But they weren't plugging this type of. I mean, they were plugging other types of stuff. They were plugging their hotlines and they're plugging their other things in the past. But I feel like they're more defined by it than they used to be.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is a curb against things like piracy, whereas the show doesn't mean as much if you watch it outside of being live and part of that whole second screen experience that
Sure.
shows are trying to get. I wonder how much that informs their decisions on these things, because they're trying so much more now to be a moment-based platform as opposed to someone that's building a library of content.
Yeah. So we're in the now era.
Yeah. I mean, that ties into the whole social media of it all as well. I think we still need to swim for a buzzier name.
All right. Well,
Yeah.
fair enough.
Yeah.
We'll let the
Yeah.
marketing people. We'll get the fair marketing people on it and see if we can come up with something.
That's Logan, I think.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Let's take. I think we got two more good questions to go. One is from Cage Side Seats, asking, question, why is this a better match on the second viewing than on the first? Now, I'm not sure if that's his opinion or if that is just...
I believe that is the official opinion of Cage Side Seats.
All right, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, why do you think it's a better match on the second viewing than on the first?
Well, I agree with I think that's Gino there. I agree with Gino on that one. I very much enjoyed it the second time. This was the first time I'd watched it in preparation for this show since WrestleMania, so it's actually been a very, very long time. I think it has to do with just removing it from the hype and removing it from a card that had two objectively superior matches.
Okay.
One technically better and one emotionally better. So it like it runs the like it really sandwiches Rock and Cena in a way that they don't really get a unique thing that makes it better than the other two in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Like Punk and Jericho just go out and out wrestle them. No, like they wrestle circles around Rock and Cena.
Sure.
And Taker and Triple H just have the gravitas that gives you such emotional catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
And that amazing performance by Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
And so what part of you needs Rock and Cena after seeing those two? But if you just watch Rock and Cena by itself, then you don't have the burden of those two matches there, and you don't have that whole like year and change of hype. You just have this pretty great 32-minute main event.
Yeah,
I think that's why.
Yeah, they also had to follow Kelly Kelly and Maria Menounos against Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres, so that was a challenge. But you're
sure.
Right that Punk and Jericho was immediately before Roxy, and I forgot about that.
Yeah,
so you were correct and I was wrong. Well, yeah. You were definitely
and it really,
correct.
It went, if I'm not mistaken, it went Taker, Triple H, and then there was the 10 man, and then the ladies match.
Actually, the ladies match is before Undertaker, Triple H.
Is it really? Then it's just the 10 man that breaks it up.
12 man, but yes.
Right. Wow. So what? Yeah. So like, you're really emotionally drained.
Yeah.
For the second half of WrestleMania.
Now they did. Punk Jericho. Now those entrances were so long that I do think that kind of those performances kind of break up a little bit. You know, the match. So you don't necessarily. Although I've always questioned the need of having the buffer match anyway, because I just kind of feel like a lot of times that kills the crowd rather than cools them down. But
I'm with you.
Yeah. But. All right, last question from A Crimson Mask, our good buddy Trey. Is it a bigger failure to disappoint with high expectations and fanfare or to be god-awful on a consistent basis? And he kind of clarified this a little bit by talking about that although Rock Cena was better than every Sid match, let's say, although there's a few Sid matches I think that were better than this, does hype play into this?
Of course hype plays into it. It's pro wrestling.
Yeah.
You have to, it's like, come on. I'm not sure he was a big fan of the whole proceeding. We bristle against our internet wrestling community a lot because you and I tend to like, these kind of things a little bit more. Like we're really like just pro Cena compared to a lot of our compatriots.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Trey is a little bit more, I think he's, I think he's close to us on Cena, but seems a bit further away from us on the match itself. But yeah, I mean, I think, if you look at, I think a WrestleMania main event, is going to be judged to a different standard than almost anything because, there have been some great ones and all of them in theory should be important. And that's why, the worst of the, or even the ones that are technically good, if they disappoint on a, like an Orton Triple H, or a, Triple H Jericho or something like that. If they, even if they're not necessarily that bad on a technical level, or even if they would have been fine matches in a certain context, you just need to have a certain punch and panache to make it as a WrestleMania main event. But I will say, like,
That big fight feel they talk about.
Right. And I mean, and obviously one of the maybe the worst I think the two worst WrestleMania matches involved, final matches involved, Sid, or close to that anyway. So, definitely the worst one, which I believe you and I reviewed. So, fun for us. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think. I think maybe the reason people were disappointed in this match is because it had so much hype, and maybe they felt like it didn't live up to it. But I don't. But I do think. I feel like it's a fine match, and I agree that. And I agree that I think. We've already kind of established the reasons, but I do think that like it's. It divorced from that those expectations. It's a match that I think more people will enjoy.
Well, I think that the nut that Trey's getting at is that it's sort of he's sort of disappointed that the opposite didn't happen, where we think like the match is better outside of the hype. Maybe he was hoping that the match would be better in the hype, like in the moment.
Sure. Yeah.
But I don't know what they do about that because hype is so subjective and living up to it is so subjective. Like I think they did their best.
Yeah, I mean I think they
I don't think they pulled any punches here.
yeah, I would agree. I don't think there's much they could do. I mean, they didn't book it poorly. It's not like they
They didn't screw around with the logic or anything.
Right. I mean, you like for example, like Cena or excuse me, Punk Rock at Rumble 2013. Like I find that to be a pretty good match, but I feel like they messed with it too much by trying to do like funny things with the ending and so on and so forth and doing the tease where Punk had won the match. I feel like if they just kept it simple and kept it more straightforward, it would have been better.
Things like that sometimes cost you in classic currency, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like we're here. They kept it, they stuck to what worked, and I think for the most part it did work. I mean, yeah, there again, they could have cut 3 minutes out of the match and maybe made it a little bit faster, but that's a minor complaint in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, certainly my dastardly bastard pro wrestling brain wants shenanigans,
Sure.
but sometimes you got to go the clean route.
Yeah, and I feel like they did the right thing.
Yeah, at least on that one, I really hope they like it's just nothing but blood and gore and nefarity next time.
Nefarity.
Nefarity.
I like it. All right, we'll see. We will find out. And of course, next year we'll review it. So.
I feel like Jesse Ventura taught me the word nefarity.
And even if he didn't, he should have.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Well, anything else you have to say about this fine match, or shall we do our plugging of things?
I think we should just head straight to the plugging.
All right, plug away.
It's not a euphemism for anything.
No, it's not.
Oh man, as usual, I'm dicking around on the internet at internationalobject.com. I've been doing some strange stuff over there with non-wrestling topics from time to time, but I'm pretty much back at it now. I was talking with Holzerman on I Am the other day, and he was like, "Your non-wrestling stuff is okay, but when you're talking about wrestling too, the non-wrestling stuff is better." And I like that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to hold true to that. So it's like my wrestling stuff informs and makes my non-wrestling stuff better, which
Sure.
is so great. I
Yeah.
think that's really good. Internationalnumbers.com. I've pretty much ditched the Twitter for that because I found having two Twitter accounts annoying. So I'm just at KSP underscore me for the most part and at KSP.me. And I guess the last one is just gridunzapress.com. We have a, I think, pretty awesome podcast network there of mostly wrestling podcasts, but a few that are non-wrestling. If you'd like to host a podcast yourself there, we offer an incredibly simple way to do that and fairly inexpensive too. So check us out at gridunspress.com.
Cool. And you should mention the newest podcast on the
Oh,
network.
that's right. That's right. The Mandible Claw is our newest podcast. It is hosted by Brandon Stroud and Daniel
Matheson.
Matheson of With Leather fame, the best and worst series. And they're both pretty awesome.
Yeah, and both have been guests on Retrospective, and both are wonderful at it. So good people. I'm glad that they are. Of course, I'm on Gradenza Press and find it's fantastic service. I've never had a problem, and it's extremely affordable and a wonderful service. So if you're in the market for doing that, you should definitely take that into consideration. So I give it my highest regards. And of course, everyone, you know the drill. Go to WrestleSpective.com for everything that you want. You can also check us out on iTunes and Stitcher. Appreciate it if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice little review and a rating on iTunes. The higher, the better. But, be honest. I don't want to pressure anybody. And of course, we're on Twitter and the Facebook and other things as well. So pretty easy to find if you want to check us out. We appreciate all the support and so on and so forth. So please, until next time, enjoy yourselves, be good, and we'll see you soon.
I just want to say one last thing.
Sure.
If anybody rates us 1 star, I will personally track you down and make you pronounce Fandango properly.
Sounds great. All right.
Okay.
Take care, everyone.